Well, last week we talked about faith, and we talked about what faith is really all about seeing those things that are unseen as if they were actually in front of our face, and holding on to those promises as if we had already received them. And what chapter 12 does is it begins with talking about keeping our eyes fixed upon Christ, because that is the way in which we reach the goal. Jesus himself looked forward to the joy that was set before him, and because of that, he was able to endure all the things that he had to endure, especially even the cross and the death that it brought, so that he might bring salvation to all men. God is going to discipline us, the Hebrew writer talks about, but we should see that the way that a son sees the discipline that he receives from his father, that he's doing it for our good, and it may seem difficult from time to time. Toward the end of chapter 12, he talks about how it is that we have not come to a mountain that's shaking and surrounded by smoke that we're afraid to approach, but instead we've come to Mount Zion and to an innumerable host of all these great saints of old that were witnesses to the fact, as chapter 11 talks about, that we can make this, we can finish this race that we've set upon, because our God is a consuming fire. So we should serve him reverently and with godly fear. But right in the middle of that is the passage that we read. And in that passage, it describes for us what are some of the things that can cause us to no longer look toward that goal, to take our eyes off of Jesus, to forget about this great company. Crooked, things that are dislocated, or things can become dislocated, that you can, as it has in verse 14, a lack of peace and a lack of holiness. That it even says in verse 15 that these are some of the things that if you're not careful, these are some of the things that will cause your battery to go dead, maybe. Got a green light. I do have a green light. I'll stay here until we get that fixed in. I'm sorry. But these are some of the things that can cause us, as it says in verse 15, to fall short even of the grace of God. And the point of it is that God's grace is so great and it's so wonderful and it's matchless, and that it abounds so far, and that there's really no reason why a person should even as Christians, it's not just a matter of falling from grace, but falling short of how far God's grace will actually extend. And then he turns and he talks about, in verse 16, he talks about Esau. And Esau was one who followed after the dictates of the flesh. And I really believe that Esau is a really good example of what bitterness can do. Things like this cause bitterness, yeah. Okay, it's working now. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau. And if you remember the story of Esau, he was so hungry on one occasion that he came in and believed that he was just going to die. So he told his brother, hey, let me have some of that stew that you've made. And his brother said, well, I'll do it, but you need to give me your birthright, the right of the firstborn. And Esau said, well, I'm going to die anyway, so what's that to me? And he sold it to him. And because of that, he despised his birthright. He put it on a par of being nothing more than, not even as valuable as a bowl of soup. He saw it as a good trade. Later on in life, when his father was about to die, he went in to receive a blessing from his father. But his brother Jacob went in ahead of time, disguised as Esau, and stole not just his birthright, but he also stole the blessing that came along with it later in life. And when that happened, Esau was very distraught, and he didn't find a place for repentance because it had already been given away. And if we're not careful, bitterness can cause us to lose track of the things that are most important in life. It can cause us to be like Esau, to take things that are holy and are valuable and are precious to us and completely destroy them. And as we're going to see in a moment, bitterness was something that was so great within the heart of Esau that he comforted himself with something that is unimaginable to many of us. And so if you're ready for your three words, let's see your notebooks. All right, the three words are very simple this morning. They are indeed the words seed, root, and tree. Because what we're going to see this morning is we're going to think about where it is that bitterness actually comes from. Where does it start? We're going to talk about what that root is and what it does once it starts to grow within the heart of an individual. And then finally, when that root begins to spring up and become a tree, how indeed it overshadows every other relationship and every other thing that we might do and pursue in life. So if we think about that term, as it's seen there in Hebrews chapter 12:12-17, it's actually where the Hebrew writer is paraphrasing something that's found in the book of Deuteronomy. And the book of Deuteronomy, when it's given, it's because God's people are being told to flee from idolatry, basically, to cast these idols away from them and to not follow after idolatry any longer. And this poisonous wormwood, this root of poison, this root of bitterness will spring up in them and cause them to depart from God. And I believe the Hebrew writer, through inspiration of the Spirit, is doing this for a very good reason. Bitterness becomes an idol to us, much like covetousness. But see, covetousness works this way. It's not so much about the things, but it's about the way those things make you feel. The power, the prestige, the security, whatever else it is, it's the way that it makes us feel. That's why it becomes an idol. So it's not just the things. With bitterness, it's the same way. Someone has mistreated us or done us wrong. There's been disappointments in life that have come along the way. It may be that we ourselves have been the one who have done certain things and made mistakes, or that we've got some regrets in our lives about opportunities we didn't take advantage of. And those things begin to fester, and it causes us to have a very negative outlook in life and even begin to lash out at other people. And when that happens, it's not because of the lashing out that we're wanting and desiring. But by lashing out, it gives us what we really desire. I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to be hurt, and I don't want to be taken advantage of. But I know that I'm not really doing anything about it, so I'm going to blame it on you. I'm going to blame it on circumstances. I'm going to blame it on the mistakes of my past. And like we talked about in our class this morning, we put ourselves in this little box. And so we need to understand what bitterness really is. It comes from a Greek word, and this term is only used about four times in the New Testament, four or five times in the New Testament. But this one commentator said that it is a figurative term denoting that fretted and irritable state of mind that keeps a man in perpetual animosity. Do you know anybody like that? A perpetual state of animosity that inclines him to harsh and uncharitable opinions of men and things, that makes him sour, crabbed, and repulsive in his general demeanor, that brings a scowl over his face and infuses venom into the words of his tongue. And I thought that was a very good definition and understanding of what bitterness really means. And you can see this everywhere in our society, and unfortunately we can sometimes see it even among brethren. That this way of looking at life, that everything's against me, that I'm always being put down, that people are treating me a certain way because of fill in the blank. And it goes on and on and on. And if we don't take care of it, it does turn into a root of bitterness that's going to spring up one day and it's going to cause trouble. And by it, it does not just defile the person from which it springs up in, but it causes the defilement of many. Because when I begin to treat you with bitterness, you know what happens? You become bitter. And then you treat me with bitterness. Then the next thing you know, we don't even want to talk to one another. And so when you start thinking about bitterness and asking the questions about whether or not bitterness actually exists in my heart, think of it this way. Is there someone that you will not talk to just because of something that they've done to you? Or that you're not going to talk to someone or be around someone because of something that someone else said? As it says in Hebrews chapter 12 about these feeble knees and dislocated joints and these crooked paths. If we are not willing to help those hands be lifted up, those knees to be strengthened, those paths to be made straight, to put back in joint the things that's been dislocated of someone, another brother or sister in Christ, that's a pretty good indication that bitterness has taken root within our heart. That's what made this study this week so convicting for me, because it is so easy and so subtle and so deceptive. And it springs up before you know it. With Esau, it says in Genesis 27, verse 42, that when this blessing had been stolen from him, he had lost his birthright and his blessing, that Jacob is told by his mother, "Your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. His father is about to die." And the thing that gave him comfort at that moment of time, knowing that his father was about to die, was the thought that once my father is dead, I'm going to kill my brother. And that made him feel better. That's what bitterness looks like. It looks like Cain, that when he was not accepted by God and became angry and his countenance fell, the scowl that's upon his face, instead of taking care of that situation and doing what was right in the sight of God, and God had warned him, look, sin lies at the door and its desire is for you. Instead of dealing with it the way that he should have, he goes out there with his brother and kills his brother. You have King Saul that was once comforted by the song playing of David. But because of the notoriety of David and the jealousy and the envy that he had over the way that people looked at David, he finally decided, I'm going to take a spear and throw it at David. And so every time he heard that song, it just reminded him of how he hated David. You have others, even like great heroes of the faith, those women like Hannah. And you remember how high esteemed Hannah is in our sight, and especially of our women. But when she was not able to be comforted by her husband because she was not able to bear a child, it talks about the way that she had been consumed and ate up with bitterness of the soul. It does not necessarily have to be that someone has wronged you. It may be that there's just been things in life that have happened that make it so difficult for us to deal with. And if we're not careful, brethren, it can destroy us and other people around us. But see, bitterness is one of those things that does indeed begin with a seed. Just like any other plant, it has a first start with a seed being planted. And the thing with a seed is that a seed first grows downward. And as it grows downward and gains a firm foothold in the ground, and then begins to spring outward. And when it goes outward, is getting all that nourishment that it needs to finally get the strength to then burst forth out of the ground. But first that seed is planted and begins to grow downward into our hearts. And where it actually comes from is really this idea of expecting the ideal, but finding reality. We think that something's going to be, and we expect something to be perfect. We expect things to go our way. But what happens is we're met with the reality of the situation, and the reality of the situation is there's nothing that's perfect. There's nothing that's ideal. And when that does not happen, that disappointment can take root if we're not careful. Someone says something wrong to us. We're at a job and we don't get recognized for our talents. We miss out on a raise. There's somebody in our life that calls us a name, or someone looks at us sideways. A spouse does something and it causes us to distrust them. There's all sorts of things that happen every single day of our life that we can begin to allow that to take root and to dwell upon that thing. And if we do that, it's really going to be a very dangerous endeavor. In Proverbs 13 and verse 12, it tells us that the expectations of the heart, hope, those things that we're wanting, when that is deferred or delayed, how it can eat us up and cause hardship within our hearts. You think of even a situation like in John chapter 11, that Jesus' disciples are with him and they're not in their normal area because people in the town are seeking to kill Jesus. So it makes sense for him to be out there. But Lazarus has become sick, and Mary and Martha are so concerned that they send word to Jesus about this thing. And Jesus hears about this with plenty of time to come to the side of that family. But he doesn't. And he waits. And then when Lazarus is finally dead, that's when Jesus shows up. And you remember Martha goes out to Jesus when she hears he's coming. She runs out to him. And you remember what Martha says? "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." That's an easy place for bitterness to sink in. To his disciples, it would have made sense for Jesus not to come into town because Lazarus is sick. And people are looking to kill Jesus. So it would make perfect sense why Jesus did not come to town. But in Martha's mind, it's this way. I expected when I sent word to you for you to come and to be by our side so that my brother would not die. Well, Martha, your brother will rise again. Well, I know that, Jesus. I know that in the resurrection he'll rise. Jesus had to remind her at that moment of time, I am the resurrection and the life. Even Mary, who sat at his feet to learn from him, she even said the same thing. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. You lose a loved one, maybe unexpectedly. You or someone you love gets a disease, and other people around you don't have that disease. They're not going through that kind of hardship. Why is it me? Why does it always happen to me? When we think about bitterness, bitterness is one of those things that's extremely personal. We don't become bitter. Most of the time, we don't become bitter because there's a war that's being fought in another country. That someone drove a car into an area and killed all these innocent people. We don't usually become bitter about that. What we become bitter about is a wife that says, my husband never throws his socks in the dirty clothes basket. Because that affects you. And you've told him over and over again, put your socks in the hamper. And he doesn't do it. You know why he doesn't do it? Because he hates you. And your whole family. Is that not the narrative that we start coming up with? It's extremely personal because it's about what happened to you. It's not what happens to all these other people. It's about what happens to you. It's extremely personal. That's why regrets can cause bitterness within our own hearts. It may be the sin that I committed. And when I see the other people that I've sinned against, it cannot help but affect me. It remembers everything and takes account of everything. And because of it, it makes us very, very pessimistic and gives us a negative outlook on life. It's one of those things that what ends up happening is we've been rejected. People haven't appreciated us as much as we think that they should. And so then we walk through the doors of the building. And as we're walking through the doors of the building, you walk past one of the brothers and they don't shake your hand or even say good morning to you. And so you come and you sit on the pew. You know, brother so-and-so did not speak to me. He didn't shake my hand this morning. It's pretty typical of him to do that. Wonder what he's got against me. Bible class teacher never calls on me to read, never calls on me to lead prayer. It's as if I were not even here. And what ends up happening is that root begins to fester and to grow. And this is why it's so easy for bitterness to grow and to spring up, because what then happens is it goes beyond that person. Because then it goes to the Bible class teacher. Then it goes to the ones that I'm sitting around. Other people don't, it's like they don't even know I'm here. They don't acknowledge me at all. They go out to lunch, they don't invite me to go to lunch with them. And that's kind of the way it is with everyone in this church. And that's the way that eldership is. I've got these things going on in my life. They haven't helped me with this problem. And that preacher's always talking about all these things up there. But what has he done to help me out? You know, this is the way the Church of Christ is. And you guys in the Church of Christ would do a lot better if you would start doing A, B, and C. That's what happens when bitterness takes root and we don't deal with it and we begin to feed it and we begin to think about these things and relive them over and over and over again. If you've seen that movie Groundhog Day, every morning you wake up and it's the same thing, because repetition is the mother of learning. The things we repeat to ourselves are the things that we learn. And if we continually dwell on the mistakes we've made or the mistakes that others have made, and realize that oftentimes it's not even the reality. It's my perception of the reality. It's what I think is happening. It's what I'm imagining is happening. It's what I can conclude is happening. And most of the time, it's not the reality. Brethren, it is so rampant in the world today. Everything is because you're homophobic. You're afraid of homosexuals. That's why you're talking about it. Everything is about racism, because it's what people have been trained to think everything's based upon. It comes from bitterness. Are people racist? Yes. Are people perceiving racism when it's not there? Yes. And where does it all come from? Bitterness. We allow things to take root and we don't deal with them the way that we're supposed to. And then we perceive that other people are mistreating us. And what ends up happening is, as it says in James chapter 3, we start misspeaking. We start becoming harsh judges of others. And in James 3 and verse 7, "For every kind of beast and bird and reptile, the creature of the sea, is tamed and been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing." My brethren, these things ought not to be so. "Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth." And he says that this type of wisdom, this way of thinking, this way of following a course through life, is not wise. Instead, it is something that descends not from above, but it's earthly, it is sensual, and it is demonic. What does it produce? Where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing is there. Bitter roots brings forth bitter fruits. It causes harsh judgments. The reason that that person did that to me is because I don't have a college education. The reason that person did that to me is because I'm not as talented as they are. The reason they did that to me was because of the color of my skin. The reason they did that to me is because I don't have as much money in my bank account as they do. The reason that they do that in that church is because this church is only about money and wanting to bring that in. That's one thing my uncle used to say all the time when he fell away from the church, that the only reason anyone wanted him to come back is so they can get his money. And if you know my family, he didn't have any. But that was his perception. Brethren, we have to realize what happens when we harbor these ideas and thoughts in our minds and allow them to spring forth. It causes us to judge other people harshly. It causes things like envy and self-seeking. It is one of those things that causes us to lie against the truth. Not only of what God has said, because God has said that we are extremely blessed people. But in our minds, when we grow bitter, we're not blessed people. Others have it better than we do. Other people are holding us down. Other people are offending us. Other people are mistreating us, ignoring us, or whatever else it may be. That's when bitterness springs forth. And it's one of those things that when you think about it, it is a very passive, aggressive way of actually defending ourselves. Because I don't want to be hurt. I don't want to be called names. I don't want to be overlooked. And so what I do then is I say, well, I don't care. I don't care. That's how they are, but I don't care. You know, I didn't get that job promotion. I don't care. How many times have you heard that or even said that? That's where that comes from. And the reason you say that is because you do care. And it did hurt. And it made you feel bad. And you don't think it was fair. And you think you deserve better than that. But instead of dealing with that, you just say, well, I don't care. And you dismiss it. And you allow that root to grow deeper and deeper and deeper. And then everything you see from that point on only feeds that. It only goes to further prove the point. And that's why you have to keep telling yourself, I don't care. Which means I actually don't care about you and what you have to say or what you think or what other people think. Because I'm about defending myself. But then what happens from that is it does indeed grow. It finally shoots up out of the ground and becomes this great tree that overshadows every other relationship in our life. and it causes harm to every relationship. In Proverbs chapter 6, 16 through 19, it has those seven things that the Lord hates. And when you look at that list of things that the Lord hates, every one of them can be traced back to allowing roots of bitterness to spring up. And it causes trouble. It causes trouble in the world around us. It causes trouble among brethren. It causes us to lie. It causes us to speak falsehood. It causes us to slander other people. It causes us to, even as Esau, have these great thoughts about, if my enemy, if this person, I want them to fail. That person who got that job instead of me, I want the bosses to see how incompetent this person is. I hope they fail. That's not right. It's not the way we should think about things. But that's what bitterness does. It turns us into people that are unrecognizable. And we have to be especially careful of this when it comes to things like marriage. In Colossians 3 and verse 19, there's an interesting passage that talks about the husband-wife relationship, where it tells husbands to not be bitter with your wife. Don't be someone who is scowling. This look of distastefulness, like you've eaten something that's sour and bitter, and that's the way that you look at your wife. You don't treat her that way. And that's easy to do, because what all this is about, it's about frustration. That's what it's all about. It's about frustration. I want things to be different, and they're not. With a marital relationship, I came into marriage thinking everything was going to be perfect. I thought everything was going to be great. And then you know what happened? You got married. And you had to start living together as a husband and wife. And you realize not everything's perfect. And not everything goes the way that you want it to go. And so when she complains to you about you not throwing your socks in the hamper, and she nags you about that thing, you start getting frustrated. Because you have some desires of your own that are not being met. And you have some things that you would like for her to do she hasn't done yet. And things you've told her to do, and she hasn't done those things yet. And so then you get frustrated. And instead of dealing with these things the way that you should, you both become angry at one another. And you start arguing about things, and you begin to quarrel about nothing. Constantly. Even in churches you see it, that brethren will argue and fuss about nothing. And they'll bring up things. It's like, why is that your topic? Why is that upsetting you so much? And as elders, if we get caught up on whatever it is that they are looking at that seems to be a small, insignificant thing, it's never going to solve the problem. Because that is just the fruit of something that goes a lot deeper. And so this is what I would say to you as one of the shepherds here. If you have these types of thoughts, these types of ideas, these things that are constantly going through your mind over and over again, first realize that it's personal to you and it's probably not the reality. And secondly, don't become so overwhelmed by it, so engrossed by it, and don't allow it to overshadow everything else in your life to such an extent that you don't know what to do. And then you walk into the office with me and Charlie and you say, here, fix it. You ever try to untangle fishing line? That's what it's like. Beware of it. Before it gets started, the only thing that you can do with bitterness, as we have in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 31 and 32, is you have to put it away. You have to get it far from you. You have to remove it from your life. And you have to replace it with things like being tender-hearted and compassionate. And above all these other things, to also be forgiving. The truest test of how appreciative you are for the grace of God is the way in which you show grace to other people. If you're not willing to forgive another person, it's really because you don't value that relationship as much as you do the hurt that you're harboring inside. And that's why bitterness is so destructive. We have to realize that by forgiving another person, and this is one of the things that's really hard for us, this is the thing that's so convicting. Forgiveness begins to feel like you're rewarding them for their bad behavior. Because they're going on with their life. They're going about their day-to-day business. But you can't seem to move past it. By forgiving, you're not giving them a reward. for their bad behavior. You're letting go of that burden that you've been carrying. Their forgiveness and their grace comes from God. But you have to be willing to forgive so that you might be released from a burden and to get this bitterness out of you. To such an extent that you have to be able to do it to the same extent that Jesus did. Because that's the standard. And you remember that Jesus, when he was on the cross, said, "Father, forgive them." They don't know what they're doing. They had not asked forgiveness at that point. They were not seeking forgiveness at that point. They were unappreciative of the person that was on that cross. If there was a right for someone to be bitter at that time, it was Jesus to say, "Father, destroy them all," because they don't know what they're doing. But instead, Jesus took the same route, you see, that Stephen himself even took. Don't charge them with this sin. It's like Paul when he said, "Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. May the Lord repay him for that." But Paul was not going to take personal vengeance. That's what it's about. That's why we're supposed to uproot it. Also, remember who you are. The book of Ruth, this little small book of Ruth, is fascinating because you have this woman named Naomi. And she is married. She's got these sons. Her husband dies. And her sons go out and marry foreign women, which may have even upset her. And then her sons die. And she just wants everybody to get away from her. Naomi's name means pleasant. But in chapter 1, verse 20, when she goes back to Jerusalem, she tells them, "Don't call me pleasant. Don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara," which means bitterness. And even at that time, she says, "Because the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. So call me that." It's interesting because nowhere does the Bible ever call her by that name. She calls herself that name. But when you get to Ruth chapter 4, you see that Ruth begins to take her attention off of the hardships and difficulties that she has had in her own life. And she begins to start paying attention to her daughter-in-law, to Ruth. And she helps Ruth build a relationship with this man named Boaz. She tells her, "Wear this. Put this on. Show yourself this way." And she helps her build a relationship with someone else. And what happens, and this is interesting the way that it says it, is in chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day,'" saying to Naomi, "'has not left you this day without a close relative. And may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, is better to you than seven sons, has borne him.' Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him." And notice this in verse 17. "Also the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, 'This, there is a son born to who?'" Naomi, not Ruth. There's a son born to Naomi. To Naomi. God has blessed Naomi with Ruth having this child. His name was Obed, who's the father of David, from the lineage which Christ our Savior came. Our blessings are greater than any of the disappointments and failures of life. And God is able to restore all that was lost, much more than we could ever even imagine. Naomi had a child through Ruth, and this was a blessing to her life. So remember who you are. Don't go by the name you've been calling yourself, because God doesn't call you that. Don't go by the name you've been calling yourself, because your brethren don't call you that. If anybody's calling you that name, failure, sinner, disappointment, ingrate, racial slurs, you don't call yourself that. God doesn't call you that, and your brethren do not call you that. That's bitterness that you hear. Your blessings outweigh every hardship. That's who you are. And so join the party. Remember Luke 15? Prodigal son goes out. He spends all that inheritance on harlotry and this unrighteous living. He comes back and the father throws this great party for him. The brother hears about it and says, "What is this?" "Well, your brother's come back. And your father's killed the fatted calf. And we're all having a party to celebrate that he's back." And the brother became angry and refused to go in. And when the father comes out to him and says, "You know what? I've been with you all these years. I haven't sinned against you. And not once have you took a skinny little cow and killed it for me and my friends so that we might celebrate. But this son of yours comes back and you're going to have a party for him." And this is the thing. The party went on whether or not the brother went in or not. The party still happened, whether the brother went in or not. The only one keeping the older brother from that party was the older brother and his bitterness. Brethren, there is tremendous joy and hope and comfort in the kingdom of our God. There is a great feast, as we studied about a few weeks ago, that Christ is holding, and we're all invited to that supper. And what a great supper it is. We're all there enjoying it. Join us. Join us. Put away bitterness. Think about others more than yourself. Stop telling yourself that story. Don't go by the name that other people call you. And join us for the party. And lastly, remember Jehovah Rapha. You remember that the children of Israel had gone through the desert. And they went for several days and began to murmur and complain against God Himself because they didn't have anything to drink. And when they come to this water, this oasis out there that's laid in front of them, they come up to the water, and it says, not because the water was bitter, but it says because of the bitterness of the people, they could not drink. God brought them face to face with what they look like. You look like something that should be so promising, so refreshing, so wonderful. But you're not. You're bitter. And if you remember, there's a branch that's thrown into that water, this tree branch that's thrown into the water, and it makes it sweet. And Jehovah Rapha, the God who heals, the Lord who heals, made that water sweet again. Brethren, that modern day equivalent is the cross of Jesus Christ. That if you've become bitter, if you can't take part in the party, if you are living by whatever name it is that you or someone else has attached to you, if you are practicing and finding it so hard to forgive yourself or others, let God heal that. That's what the cross of Christ does. It offers forgiveness. Because forgiveness for us, brethren, needs to be one of those things. It's not just something that we do. Forgiveness is a mindset that we're always supposed to have. Learn to forgive yourself. Learn to forgive other people. Let go of bitterness, lest it spring up, and through it many become defiled. It will save you. It will save your family. It will save your marriage. It will save your relationship with others. Don't let it overshadow things. Get rid of it while you have the chance. If you're subject to the invitation, if you need to be baptized so that your sins can be forgiven, or if you need to come to God asking help to get rid of some of the bitterness that you feel toward others, let us help you in any way that we can. Because the question we're going to leave with you this morning is, are you becoming better or are you becoming bitter? Or as that is, are you becoming bitter or are you becoming better? Which is it? Hopefully, and God bless you if you are becoming better. Let us help you if we can. As together we stand and sing, won't you come?